Whenever I was at Betty's, I was always poking around in her closets because they were a treasure trove of feminist history. And she would always chase me away whenever she was distracted on her computer or on the phone. I would creep in and I would just start looking through things. And one day I found a box of these little pamphlets, and it said first edition, liberating masturbation. So I'm in. Like, what is liberating masturbation? And I take it out, and the cover is black. And there is a white cunt flower, one of Betty's drawings, and under it says Betty Dodson, just her signature. There's no title. That's it. And it opens up. And it says, Liberating Masturbation, a Meditation on Self-Love. And as I leaf through it, it's just these beautiful images of sexuality. And in the middle are some of the vulva sketches where Betty took Polaroids of her girlfriend's vulvas and drew them to document the variety. And that book, it just pulls you in. It is so warm and it's so sex positive. And I love Betty went first person about how she connected to her body and she discovered her orgasm. So I come out with it. I'm like, Betty, what is... So here's the story of liberating masturbation. In the 70s, when Ms. Magazine was out and about and documenting the movement, Gloria Steinem met with Betty and they wanted to do an article about sexuality. And Betty pitched them on, let's talk about my masturbation practice, my connection to myself, because that's the foundation and that's what empowered me to go out and then communicate my sexual needs to my partner and blah, blah, blah. So they met. And it took about 2 years of going back and forth for the article to run. And I saw in Betty's journal, she would say, oh, I met, we had this great meeting, and I wrote this 18-page manifesto. And I saw Gloria at an event, and it was like, General, she used to call her General, you know, when is my article going to run? And she'd have no information. And finally, there's a page in the journal, she goes, I saw Gloria. And she said, it's going to run. And it did. And it was called Getting to Know Me. But they didn't print the 18-page. They printed 2 pages. And Harriet Lyons, who was working with Betty as her editor, said, you know, we're not going to print the whole thing. But what if we put a little thing at the end of the article and said, hey, if you'd like to receive the full 18-page manuscript, send a $2 check to Betty Dodson, 121 Madison Avenue, blah, blah, blah. So the article comes out, and it's a great picture of Betty in a yoga pose, nude. And then the article, it's just, I have the original magazine that it ran in, and it's great. And slowly but surely, Betty received thousands of $2 checks. And now she didn't know what to do. Now she had to publish a book. And so that's how this book was born. And she was bi-coastal and she did it in San Francisco. And I have this wonderful picture of her in the nude with all of these pages and vulva sketches on the wall. And she's arranging the book. And when the book was done, she had to mail them all out herself. She didn't have a publisher. She self-published. And this was the age of the feminist bookstores. So they would put in orders. So all of a sudden, she was a publisher and an author. And she had a shopping cart. She lived right by the 34th Street post office. And she said, Carlin, every, you know, it was a hand job, she called it. She goes, I would have to take a book, get my check, put it in a, you know, mailing sleeve, and then I would put the address on it, and I'd slap a stamp on it, and then I would fill up my cart, and I would go down to the post office, and she was like their hero. Betty would wheel in with that shopping cart, and they would cheer her, and then one day they asked, like, what are you sending? Because it just, it kept on going. For about 2 years, she was sending out all of these books. And yeah, you'd be interested. Well, what are you shipping that everyone wants? And so she gave them all signed copies at the post office, and she became their darling. She used to say that every time she shipped out a copy of Liberating Masturbation, it was like she was sending out an orgasm. And still to this day, women will ask permission to get the cunt flower from the front cover tattooed on their bodies. I tattooed it on my left forearm last year myself. People will say how they found it in their mother's book collection as a teenager, or women will say it changed their lives. And that was that. And then feminism was roaring for a little bit. And then in the 80s, it kind of went on the decline. And for a long period, Betty was cliffhanging. I mean, there was one year where she made $1,500. She was barely making rent. And then in the 80s, with the HIV epidemic, she was approached by Random House to take Liberating Masturbation, and which is about, I think, 70 pages, 60 pages, make it a full 225-page book. And they gave her an editor, and she wrote Sex for One. And she loved that period. She loved becoming an author. And she said that in the beginning, salesmen would take the books to bookstores and sell them. And so she had the vulva sketches in there and penis sketches that she had done. And the salesman wouldn't sell the book if the penis sketches were included. So she had to drop those. But the beautiful thing about Sex for One is it was just this sex positive first person account with so much sex information and support and love and the art that she did. Betty drew everything. And that book has been translated to 25 languages. And it's an international bestseller, Sex for One. And it was just listed in one of the top 10 all-time sex books. And very often PhDs will tell me that, like, Carlin, she wrote, like, in sexology, it's the Bible. Very often women would take workshops and they would come in with their copies of Sex for One to get signed. And I remember we had two Chinese sexologists come and they barely spoke English. And they had their copy of Sex for One with all the Chinese characters and Betty signed it. And I remember wondering, like, if they took from the body sex circle, you know, if they could understand the experience without hearing the women's shares, without getting the education. And I remember at the end, we got in a tight circle and there's a ritual where we hold hands and then we make eye contact with all the women. You make eye contact with each woman, everybody. And then we go around and we pick a word of how we're feeling. And their word was freedom. And Sex for One did that. Sex for One kind of kicked off Betty's career as a sexologist and the workshops. It fed the workshops. And then after Sex for One, she did another book, Orgasms for Two, which is a great book. It was about Betty at 70 having a relationship with a younger man at 30 and how she rediscovered partner sex. And she thought it would be a bestseller. But it was like too much sex. And I guess when you're 70, having sex with a 30-year-old, it just, like, people couldn't process it at all. But it's a wonderful book with so much sex information in it. It goes in and out of print. But if you get your hands on a copy, it's a really great read. So Betty's this established international best-selling author. And now I'm taking her work and I'm making it digital and I'm building community, and we're trying to reach this new audience. And I'm talking all the time about content. You know, content is king. We have to create more content. And we're doing our blogs and we're writing sex features and we're doing our YouTube clip. And one day I'm poking around in the closets and once again I find gold. So I find this box. It's about 8.5 by 11. Looks like it'd hold about 2 reams of copy paper, and there's like an inch of dust on the top, and it's all the way in the back. So I pull it out, and I know this is special. And I put it on Betty's desk. She's on her computer. I take off the cover, and I go, Betty, what is this? What amazing piece of feminist history is this? And I see on the title page, The Sexual Memoir of Elizabeth Dodderson. Like, Betty, who's Elizabeth Dodderson? And she starts laughing. She goes, oh, Carlin, it's me. It's my memoir. It took me about 28 years to write it. And it's an account of my journey as a person, my experience in the sexual revolution and feminism, and how I became a sexologist and all. And I'm dumbfounded. I'm like, Betty, you had a memoir sitting in your closet this whole time? Like, we'd been working together for about 3 years at this point. And I'm like, we have to publish this now. Let's call Random House. And she goes, Carlin, I'm going to stop you right there. She said, I spoke to Shay, my editor at Random House, in the 80s, right after the success of Sex for One, about doing my autobiography, and it was a hard no. They said they'd release it if it was a novel. And I said no, because if we're teaching women that there's no shame in owning your sex life and talking openly about sexuality, creating a dialogue in the culture about what healthy sexual expression looks like, how can I make it a novel? It has to be an autobiography. So I walked. And then I decided I would send it out to other publishers, right? Because I didn't have an exclusive with Random House. And everyone rejected it. And I found in her journals all the rejection letters. She kept them. There were about 15. And they'll say, oh, thank you for the interest. And they give you kind of the PC. Yeah, it's a, you know, we're not going to move forward with this. And there was only one letter that was honest. And they said, you know, it's too much sex. It's interesting because when I think of the memoir, I don't think about the sex in it. I think about Betty as a person creating the life that she wanted for herself. So the first things first, I wanted to read it from cover to cover and begged her to take it home because this was the only copy. It was typed. You remember the really thin see-through type paper? That's what it was. So I start reading and I'm blown away. I mean, the courage Betty had to forge the path to be born in 1929 and come to New York in 1950, right? You can't get a lease or a credit card or, you know, and find your way and go through art school and then go into feminism. I mean, it was remarkable. But there were some things that were missing because at this point we had traveled enough together and I'd heard all the stories that I knew the people that were really, really important to Betty's development. So I'm like, Betty, you know, there are some people that are missing. What about Sheila? You started the workshops with Sheila. She was a big part of your life. She has to be in there. And then I said, and what about your dad? You never mentioned your dad. And I think that's really important because your dad was an artist. And during the Depression, he hand-painted signs and you guys had money as a family and you made it through and he supported you to come to New York. And then what about his brother, Uncle Howard? When you came to Manhattan, he lived here and he put you through art school and he sent you to Paris to study. So I think all of these people are important. So we'd sit side by side on computers writing her memoir. And so I would come up with ideas. She would write a few pages. I would edit them. And it was this beautiful volley back and forth. And we had so much fun reliving, reminiscing. And then we would imagine, you know, the stories going out there and how women would receive them. And really, it was all about giving women permission to live, right? To live your life and be human and make mistakes and maybe have go too far like Betty did and have some regrets. But God damn it, you learn some stuff about yourself. So the memoir is pretty much done. And we have a digital copy of it. And I'm like, okay, I think it's pretty much done. Let's think about maybe having an event where we release the book and you can, you know, sign copies. And I found this really wonderful space, Kiki de Montparnasse. It's this high-end lingerie sex shop that in Soho. And I think they're British. It's kikidm.com. Their stuff is so sumptuous. You walk into the store and it just, it's a woman's oasis. They have things like onyx bead restraints and pearl harnesses and this boudoir chaise with brass stirrups that you can kind of get into different positions. And the lingerie, everything is silk and well-constructed and high-end lace. And it's two floors. And everything is kind of this dusty pink color with black accents. And I knew that had to be where we had it. And on the second floor, they had a big open space. So we set out starting this event. And that would be for the release. And we're getting down to the wire. Like, the memoir has to go to print. Like, we need time to print the books and get it out there. And Betty shut down. She was like, I don't think it's done, and I have to go back. And she started kind of reworking and moving things around in the digital draft and making a mess. And I said, Betty, we have to let it go. No, like, it's done. And she looked at me and said, you know, Caroline, I'm scared. I'm scared about putting my life out there and it not being well received. Because I think Liberating Masturbation was hugely successful. Sex for One, hugely successful. And then she had Orgasms for Two, where she went first person about something, you know, having a relationship with a younger man. At the same time, Hugh Hefner had his E-series where he was living with three 20-year-olds, but not a woman. And she's like, that's sexual double standard. I don't know. Am I going to ruin my name? Am I going to ruin my legacy and my career? And I said, Betty, I'm telling you, as a woman, you have to put this out there. It will change women's lives. And she said, okay. And we missed the deadline for the print edition, so we released it first as an ebook. And it was Betty Dotson, My Sexual Memoir. We had a great time at the event at Kiki. We drank, a couple of cases of champagne. Everyone came to celebrate Betty. We had put together this visual presentation of images and video of Betty from all throughout her career. And it was perfect. It was everything I wanted for Betty. I wanted her to have that moment of being celebrated for the life that she had lived and that she created, with no fear of judgment and no negative consequence. Betty changed the title to her memoir a couple of times. Okay, so then it became Betty Dotson, My Romantic Love Wars. And then finally we settled on Betty Dotson, Sex by Design. And that came from a YouTube clip where Betty had talked about how you have to design your sex life. And she's like, sex should be by design. It shouldn't just be happenstance. We shouldn't just have a couple of drinks, hook up with someone, or hope for the best, or maybe they'll know our body. No, you have to design it. You have to start with masturbation and understand what you like, and then get inspired by things and explore and say, hey, I'd like to try that with you. Right? With our partners, like, have this beautiful exchange and communication. And I brought it up one day. I'm like, you know, title for your book. She wasn't happy. I was like, what about Sex by Design? Because that's what you did. And she loved it. So if you go on Amazon, it's The Betty Dotson Story, Sex by Design. And it's a little bit of a sleeper, that memoir. And then what was interesting is women would start showing up to workshops with a copy of the memoir for Betty to sign. And I loved getting the positive feedback. You know, I'd see Betty just kind of light up when women would say, you know, I was reading this story and God, it was so exciting. You know, it was so hot. I had to masturbate. And that became the new like benchmark. Like if someone read the memoir and they had to masturbate, it meant it was good. And I remember I had given it to a media kind of tycoon that I was spending time with to read. And I asked his opinion. He goes, you know, Carlin, it was good. There was a lot of sex, but it didn't turn me on. And I thought, yes, that's the point. It's not about the male model of sexuality. It's not about the things that turn on men. This is sex from a woman's perspective. This is real, like, history of a woman who was born at a time where you never had sex before marriage. And then at 40, after getting her divorce, the sexual revolution happens. And they're doing the whole group sex scene which I know now sounds crazy, but this is pre-HIV and pre-herpes. And Betty said, you know, I learned my PhD in sexology was from going to those orgies because I could see sex. And she goes, and what I understood really quickly is the women weren't getting off. They were faking. The men were getting everything they needed and the women weren't. And she says, you know what? She hosted some of these sex parties at her apartment where we held the workshops. And she said, without fail, Carlin, the guys would be good for a round or two. And then we'd end up in the back room, just the women, us, because we still wanted more because we can have multiples. And we would end up vibrating together. And she said, the energy was magic. It was different. And that was really the beginning of Betty becoming the activist. Right, so the explorer becomes the author that becomes the activist. And she was like, you know, it wasn't fair that women weren't having orgasms. And the sex parties quickly fell off. But she used to always say to me, she's like, Carlin, the sexual revolution happened. And everyone needs to know that. Because we had this beautiful expansion where we could think about coupling outside of marriage and monogamy. That's one choice. And I think that's what Betty's memoir captures. Betty challenged herself to try every sex style. You know, what would it be like if I shaved my head and I was androgynous? What would it be like if I went to a gay bathhouse with my shaven head and people didn't know if I was male or female? What would it be like, right, to end up having a monogamous relationship in my 70s and pull off romantic love? It's all there. The moments, the epiphanies, right? The breakthroughs, the challenges, the failures. It's so rare that when you're reading a memoir that you really feel like you've gotten the whole story, that they didn't hold anything back because it was unflattering. It was too true. And Betty's memoir goes all the way there. So the memoir's out. We changed the title a few times. And then 2015 rolls around, I'm 8 months pregnant, and Betty decides she wants to include 60 pictures in the middle of the memoir. And she calls up one day, she goes, you know what, I know you're pregnant, but the memoir is my baby, and I'm pregnant too, and you're going to come here and help me. And I would like put on my big down coat and waddle up and down subway staircases, 8 months pregnant, go into Betty's, and we had all the photos on the floor. And I'm so glad we did that. Because again, it was reminiscing. I got all the stories and we chose the pictures and it really added a lot more heart to the memoir. And what's different about these pictures, they're not groups of people smiling at tables or on a holiday. It's Betty living her life and owning her sexuality and exploring and the joy that is in these pictures. And they're just so over the top. It's like things you've never seen. And I'm so glad that we did that and added the pictures to the memoir. It was really valuable. Just the other day, I found my copy of Betty's memoir. And I'd never really read the final copy of it from beginning to end with the pictures because I had a young child, a baby. And I opened the front page and there was an inscription. And it said, "Dear partner, without you, this book would never have happened. Thank you from the bottom of my clit." And I think that's true as women, that there are times that we're going to put ourselves out there and we're going to second guess and we're going to judge ourselves and the shame's going to creep in. And we need someone to support us. I mean, that's how I see the workshops in sisterhood. It's like women coming together. And I just came across this study that found that when women get together in groups on a regular basis, just women, the larger the group and the more they get together, the more frequently they get together, the longer they live. Just let that sink in for a moment. And Betty made it to 91. And Betty didn't have the best habits. She was more of a binger. So she'd go from eating a raw diet to eating a steak. to not drinking anything to drinking martinis around the clock, to not smoking at all to smoking cigarettes and cannabis. But she lived so long. And at the end of life, she used to say, "Carlin, how am I going to die? There's nothing wrong with me." And I always thought it was the orgasm, you know, connecting to the orgasm in the body and getting hit of all those hormones was what sustained her. But I think what sustained her was running those workshops with women coming from all over the world to her apartment for the better part of 40 years. Hers was a life well lived.